This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
A rare situation is allowing you to buy some ETF stocks for 50% off. Learn more at crushthestreet.com/profit2017.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into crushthestreet.com. We're going to talk about precious metals today and the resource sector. I got David Morgan on the line with me, expert on precious metals, commodities, technology trends, and he's someone who frisks the market for value opportunities and is very well educated. He's second to none, really, in the precious metals community and the resource sector in general, and he's agreed to spend some time with us today here at Crush the Street. So, David Morgan, thanks for coming on the line with me once again.
Well, Kenneth, thank you. I'm going to live up to an introduction, but thank you for having me.
Well, you always do, and you're always so informative. I mean, you have years of knowledge and research and education and experience in these markets, and we always appreciate you coming on the line. So one thing that we have talked about in the past is yield and how bad it is that there's a lack of it and how badly it fares for specifically retirees. Really, the savings that someone needs to retire now is hyperinflated number. And if you were depending on some sort of safe yield from a bank or a bond, you're dealing with almost no return. Now, the yield curve is flattening, and this is what I want to talk to you about. And this just happened to have predicted some of the most significant economic recessions we've had over the last century. And yields haven't been this flat since 07, right before we went into the 08 crisis. So I'd like to start off with your thoughts on this.
Well, I don't have much to add, Kenneth. You outlined it perfectly. I'll just reconfirm that the yield curve is showing, I'd say, absolute within quotation marks, fact that we are really in a recession. But of course, the government always looks with 20/20 hindsight. So probably a year from now, they'll say that we've been in an official recession for the last 3 months or something along those lines. But I would like to backtrack a little bit about the bond yield. And this was pointed out to me by Keith Weiner that does a blog, and he's not really that well known, although he's fairly well known. He does do a fair amount of conferences. He does a lot in Europe, actually, and work with Antal Fedeke, and he's pretty good brain trust. I've had a few conversations with him and got to be reacquainted with him at the Writers Conference at Vancouver, BC here recently. And what he pointed out when I interviewed him for our mastermind clients was, and I hadn't thought of this, so I want to give him credit, that if you look at the bond yields that we currently have in the United States, it proves hyperinflation. And I sort of kept my mouth shut because I certainly like to learn something new, preferably on a daily basis. And I've never claimed to know know everything about the silver market or anything else in life. But back on point, what you would have to have, and I forget the number, so I'll give you the right idea, but you'd have to have like something like, I don't know, $10 or $15 million at the current yield rate in order to, eke out a $40,000 a year. You can do the math. It's pretty simple arithmetic. Cash flow off of your bond portfolio, which means that you'd have to have, millions of dollars in a quote unquote safe investment, which would be the long bond as an example, in order to have enough yield to produce a meager income for you to retire on. And I never thought of it in those terms before. I mean, I thought of it in those terms when I was younger, but I hadn't thought of it in recent terms, which is really pointing out that you would have to have a huge amount of net worth in that market in order to produce a yield that you can live off of. And that's really pointing to hyperinflation from his perspective. And I agree with him. I think that really shows you just how crazy this market really is. And I think we should, I'm going to throw it back to you, discuss, the type of problems that are in the mainstream news about pension issues that are facing not only people in the U.S., but globally.
You know what, David, it's funny. We didn't even talk about this in the pre-interview here, but something I wanted to bring up was this pension story I read this morning here in Los Angeles, the $20.2 billion fire and police pension system. They lowered their assumed rate of return a quarter of a percent to 7.25% because yields are becoming harder to come by because historically low bond yields and high stock market valuations, right? Two aspects that they depend on are at, you know, polar extremes here. So this minor adjustment is expected to cost taxpayers $27 million in additional contributions. So maybe you read the same story as me this morning, but you know, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, we're talking about a historically low yielding environment. We started off with that, and the whole system is dependent on a growing valuation of assets.
Exactly. So that's great to light. There's others. I mean, if you look at General Electric, I mean, one of the stalwarts of stalwarts on the Dow Jones or the S&P or both. I mean, they are very, very underfunded on their pension plans. You look at an annuity, you look at an insurance company that's going to pay you a certain amount based on a lump sum payment that you gave them. I mean, all these things are dependent on basically the safe and secure market, which is unsafe and unsecure, which is the U.S. bond market and all other nation states. Corporate bonds, you might have a better chance if you pick the right corporations that are actually solvent and not in debt problems. So we have like Illinois, a whole state that basically can't maintain what it is promised. And then, of course, the one you bring up. So they're all across the board. Does that mean every single case? No. What it means is that because of these low yields, it has unintended consequences, which the insurance companies, annuities, state pension funds, private pension funds are all absolutely underwater. And now we have to pretend that everything is okay and we can make up for that yield by going into a higher risk environment, which means the stock market, which is pushed higher by the powers that be in order to maintain a false premise that you can print wealth, that everything is okay, and we pretend that you know, things will always be the same. And we're coming to a point now, I believe, and I know I probably sound like a broken record, and you know, for the audience, let me just state that no one has a perfect crystal ball, and we are unable to forecast with accuracy the amount of delusion that the public will buy into, because if we had enough people that stood up and told the absolute truth, we probably wouldn't have extended this hypocrisy this far. So back on point, dire straits just ahead, in my view, for many, many people that are going to get a wake-up call like they've never gotten before, because a lot of people pretend or don't even know that the system is in such unbelievably insolvent proportions that what they planned on for their safe and secure retirement, pension, even something at the government level is in jeopardy in some cases. So, you know, I'm not overstating the case. In fact, I wish I could emphasize it more, because this is something that I've started doing way back when, Kenneth, as you well know, and said, look, if you can't take care of yourself, take self-responsibility, and you expect someone else, be it your employer, be it the government at the federal or the state level, you really need to reexamine that, because we are entering a time where the promises will become greater, but the returns will be basically nil.
Really, what the competition is, you know, there's so many competitors coming into the system, and I'll give you a few examples here. We have peer-to-peer lending solutions that are sidestepping the banks, Uber sidestepping taxis, Airbnb sidestepping hotels. The internet for information is sidestepping college in an age when college educations are priced higher than they've ever been. And we have gold and silver and even Bitcoin now competing with the conventional fiat money system. So before we get into gold and silver here, I'd like to talk about how disruptive the free market is for just everything we know as conventional and really what the government depends on being held together, because that this is where all the eggs are and how they've manipulated it so long and become so dependent on it. Just like the pension system, it's so dependent on the system staying together when there's so many competing forces out there that are not making it very easy to do.
Absolutely a perfect question. So we are in an environment where, first of all, the free market cannot be stamped out, no matter what the powers that be edict for the population and the subset, or the paupers, the peasants, the peons, the quote unquote citizens, and how much of a control freak mechanism they put in. The free market always comes to the rescue, so to speak. Doesn't mean it saves everybody, but there's enough emphasis. So the idea that necessity is the mother of invention is exactly what you've outlined. So let's just take a couple of these things. One is, rather than loan your money, or buy an annuity, or put it into these quote unquote safe investments, or even in the bond, think outside the box. What would it be like to do some of these Indiegogo, or I think there's the GoFundMe. Kenneth, you can help me out. You're younger, but there's several of these opportunities where you can make loans to individuals and they back it up with what they're going to do with the money. And these are very high risk. Let me just state that right out in front. But there's some that are less. It takes due diligence on your part. But if you put a portfolio together of, let's say, 10 of these that you vetted yourself or had someone help you with it, you might get a much better return and at the same time be helping somebody with a brilliant idea that could come to the fore and actually do even better than perhaps a loan based on what the structure of what the loan amount is and how the payback is performed. In other words, you could get part of a business in some cases. I don't have time to go into all this, but what I'm trying to suggest is to emphasize what you just stated. The free market has come to the rescue in a very small scale that is ramping up rapidly in the cryptocurrency market world. I mean, extremely rapidly. Will come into other areas such as, you know, peer-to-peer loans. Could be business-to-business or person-to-person or person-to-business and that type of thing, where it's outside of the current paradigm. And this is because the market has demanded a higher yield, where people are more transparent, they see where their money's going, and they have a better chance of probably getting a yield or a return on their investment rather than something safe and sound where you're getting like 2%. So this is something you'll see more and more. I am very in favor of it, but a word of caution, and that is, in a free market, it means that you have the freedom to succeed and to fail. And it also comes back to, I guess, the main thrust of my whole conversation with you today, Kenneth, which is personal responsibility. When you buy a government bond or something from a corporate bond or whatever, it's, people have the idea that, one, it's safe, when, again, in a lot of cases it is not, especially when you're near the end of the paradigm like we are right now. And secondly, they have somebody to blame. Oh, well, you know, my broker this, or my fund manager that, or whatever. In the case of making a direct investment to someone that's got a new idea that you like and you're willing to put up some risk capital, again, it goes back to your personal responsibility. Don't take anyone's word for anything. But if you do your due diligence, again, put a portfolio together. I wouldn't do it with just one. I suggest 10. You might have a great return, have some fun, help someone out, and really participate in the new economy.
Yeah, it's really great. And, you know, after we're now dealing with Dodd-Frank, and the banks are willing to lend to big companies, but it's the average person who is suffering because they've tightened the screws on, middle-class Americans who are wanting to kind of get this economy going and do something for themselves and their families. And we have banks really putting the brakes on lending when they actually do have some money to lend in many cases. And here we have the rise of the solutions, you know, with companies like LendingClub or Peer Street for homes and just so many different things. Rich Uncles is out there doing things for investing, if people want to invest in real estate. It's pretty cool. And I love seeing that. I love seeing the internet in many ways provide solutions in the free market. And of course, Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are a major, major answer to the problems that came about in 2008. Of course, Bitcoin came out of the 2008 economic crisis, which is very, very telling for what the world was dealing with at the time. So let's talk about precious metals here. At the start of the year, the dollar index was over 100. We saw it at 103. And we've seen some weakness in the dollar now in the 97 range. And gold seems to be holding up. If you consider that the Fed has been tightening the screws on the monetary policy by raising interest rates, maybe not as much as they would have liked to, but nonetheless, they are tightening the screws on things. And gold is still holding up from its low. Any thoughts on this?
And not much to add, Kenneth. Gold is doing relatively well. The interest rate conundrum really doesn't mean that much at this point. Certainly, it has some psychological effect and shows that the Fed's tough and that we're going in a different direction and on. But based on the yield curve that we talked about earlier and the fact that interest rates really don't do much to gold in the long term unless they are real interest rates above the true inflation rate, which means something probably along the lines of 5% or more. And we're well below that, as you know. And to go that high even at this point in time would just completely destroy the ability of the interest payments to be met based on what's required at that kind of an interest rate. And we're going to get there regardless of interest rates going high or not. So there's a lot going on. And I don't think that you can really look at the conventional wisdom surrounding interest rates unless you really understand what we've already discussed on your program. What we do need to do is focus on what are the solutions, and we've already outlined a few of those. I think that gold and cryptocurrencies are probably something that could be utilized together, where you use the blockchain technology with a hard asset and monetize it. And I think that's something that not only has taken place, I'm aware there are a few out there, but I think you'll see more of those. I think there is a break between the thinking of, let's say, the gray hair such as yours truly and the younger folks such as yourself, and I won't speak for you, can verify or not, but the idea of, you know, who's in charge of making something out of nothing, which means a digitally based currency, which is basically what is globally enacted. I mean, really, they don't print up much paper anymore. It's basically digits in a computer system, in a financial structure or a banking system. And someone else coming along and doing basically the same thing, where the contract is the entity that starts it has an agreement contractually, basically, with everyone that wants to utilize it. So it's basically the same system. It's just in one case, it's centrally controlled with everything being monitored and on. In the second case, it's there is no central control. It's basically people gathering together with the same idea that agree that this is a means of payment. My take is that I like, you know, specie money, and that it could be enacted where you would have both. You would have a platform which would allow you to transfer money digitally. And of course, just like the banking system, or let me just restate that, just as the bullion banking system does currently, you would be shifting metal back and forth electronically, and basically it would stay in the depository until such time as either party decided they wanted to have, you know, the physical gold out. And there has to be limits on it. I mean, you couldn't take a gram of gold out. It'd have to be something like a quarter ounce or greater or something along those lines. But that's something, again, built into the contract. As long as everybody that's with, you know, XYZ crypto gold agrees that, you know, at this point, everything's in grams, and payments are made and goods and services transfer, et cetera, And you are allowed to take it up to physical if you wish, but it's limited to this amount or greater than. Make sense?
It certainly does. And I've just been blown away by the technology and just the revolution that's taken place in the monetary system. It's really, and I know everyone's been saying this now, I probably started by Andreas Antonopoulos, but we're in the early 90s of, you know, this new fiat, or not fiat, but this cryptocurrency paradigm. You know, what will come out of this is just so unknown. I know people complain that there's about 1,000 different cryptocurrencies out there, and they're comparing it to the dot-com bubble. And certainly, we're probably getting to some sort of cryptocurrency bubble. But keep in mind, out of the dot-com bubble, we've had Facebook, Amazon, Google, Netflix, and some of these, you know, big movers and shakers that came out of that major crash, which are changing the world as we know. I mean, we know Amazon has just bought over 400 Whole Foods locations. They went from being strictly online to now having 400 stores, brick and mortar. I mean, and what a game changer that is for this tech company, and just the landscape changing for what we as humans are going to be dealing with. So many rapid changes happening, and I think cryptocurrencies are a way of the future. But I don't want to discount gold in that. A lot of people are frustrated with gold and silver because we have this new hot girl on the block, Bitcoin. And the fact is, you know, gold is still very, very historically undervalued. I mean, it's over 5,000 years old in terms of being money to the world. And I don't want to discount that. Europe is still in dismal shape with anemic growth. And even in a strong dollar environment, foreign gold purchasing could very well push gold higher, even with the dollar being stronger. So, you know, I'd like you to touch on that. You know, even if we see a strong U.S. environment like Donald Trump is promising, could we still see gold go higher because the rest of the world is dealing with problems that is pushing gold higher?
Oh, absolutely. I think it boils down to, you know, confidence or trust, or really the same word. So when the confidence breaks down, there'll be a huge move back into the precious metals. And this is basically a financial survival instinct that's held basically in the DNA of the population at large. Most people are so understudied or undereducated or brainwashed about what gold is and represents that they don't want anything to do with it because they've been told not to. But the fact is, there's no one on the planet that can say that there's been something for 4,000 or 5,000 years that has maintained the ability for people to transact business. One of the, I think, issues, and this is, you know, my take, and there are others that agree, is the solvency of gold, meaning how much can you use it? You know, it's a great way to save. You've got, you know, a stack of, you know, gold coins or silver coins would be probably a better example as far as stacking is concerned. And it's a great way to save. But then you've got to go back into the system. You got to go back down to your dealer. You got to cash those into the currency of choice, depending where you live. If you're in Europe or Japan or the U.S. or Canada, turn that back into the quote unquote coin of the realm, and you're back in the system, and then you make a payment for your car, your house, your loan to somebody or whatever. Well, if you go on a blockchain, it eliminates that. And this is a huge move, I think, if you think it through, which means that you don't have to go back to your broker in order to cash out your gold, fill out some form or whatever. If you have a contract where it's amenable to both sides, you can just electronically move those, you know, required grams between parties. So it makes the utility of real money something that is as efficient as anything else that's out there. And that, I think, is a big plus that's really been, in my view, perhaps overlooked by what the utility value of both the precious metals could be in the not too distant future. Right now, again, unless you have the ability to save, which we know, Kenneth, is difficult with the current economic, physical economy, And in the case of Bitcoin or any of the cryptos, it's not necessarily a savings account. It's basically a utilization of transferring, you know, money back and forth. And so this would open up, I think, a lot more people, especially younger people that are seeing the disruptive ability of the internet to move along new ideas, new technologies, and new ways of doing business. And I want to digress for a moment just to Uber, which we've talked about, and you could use Lyft. I'm not trying to single out any of them. But with that change that's taken place here in the last few years, many of the millennials are looking at, why do I need a car? Hmm. You know, this is a thought that my generation would never have entertained. But now it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, I live in an area that has Uber all over the place. Why do I need to be burdened with the liability? I mean, a car is not really an asset. Most lose value over time. You've got insurance, you've got maintenance, you've got to provide fuel for it. Sometimes it's a hassle as can be to park. I mean, I know that from my own experience. I don't want to dwell on this too far, but I'm saying this is something that gets people in a new paradigm. Hey, I'm actually happier by taking public transportation or Uber when I need to, because it really makes my life better by not having this burden. Now, of course, that depends where you live, et cetera. I'm just using it as an example, but I digress to make that point, because this is a type of thinking that you've been outlining on this discussion that gets people outside of the normal paradigm into the, let's say, the new paradigm, where people really start to consider what is valuable and what is not. I'm going to digress even further, but my mother had a saying that I adopted quite some time ago, and she says, well, the more you own, the more it owns you. And, you know, I'm not the type that's had a lot of toys. I've certainly had a lot of fun, but, you know, I've never wanted to own a boat. I could afford a boat, but I thought it was far superior to rent one when I wanted to do a houseboat or a speedboat or, you know, anything in between, rather than own one and have the hassle of, again, the maintenance and, you know, all the fees that go with the marina and all that stuff. So I come back around to you. You could shoot out another question, but I don't want to make it clear that I think the main thrust of our discussion has been, you know, thinking outside of the box, looking into the future and seeing it maybe perhaps not as doomy as perhaps myself and others have painted it, where these disruptive technologies are offering a huge opportunity for, let's say, the next generation or so.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it goes to show how resilient people are in the long term, despite the bad financial economic problems we're facing. Because to a certain degree, it's hard to anticipate how much advancements in technology will offset some of those things. Even the poorest person now, or maybe in 10 or 20 years, might live a pretty decent standard of living just because of technology and how cheap it is to sustain someone. Who knows? I don't have any deep research on that or anything, but I think it's not inconceivable to expect things like that here in the next, you know, few decades. Who knows? If you want to add anything to that, David, feel free. If not, I'd like to get into the precious metal stocks here before we conclude this interview.
Sure, let's go ahead.
David, so 2016 seemed to really just be the start. Everyone got really excited about precious metal stocks, and it was dynamic. But it was short-lived, if you asked me. And, you know, I'd like to get an idea of where we are in this right now and what we can anticipate in your experience of investing in this sector.
Well, I think the 2015 low that happened in, you know, December or so was the bottom. There's others in our peer group that disagree, but I, you know, so far I'm right. We are right until we're proven wrong. We saw a great lift in through the summer, which is unusual for mining and metals, last year in 2016. And we lost a great deal of gains from about September down to the end of the year 2016. Having said that, the best performing group, according to IBD, Investors Business Daily, for the year, in other words, all of the year 2016, was the mining and metal sector. Mm-hmm. So even with the up and down for the whole year, it outperformed. And you don't hear that, you know, beat the DJI or beat all these other sectors, you know, technology sector, biotech, retail, whatever else, that have several categories. So now you go to 2017, and a lot of folks thought it'd be kind of a repeat of 2016, and so far it has not been that way. I do think we're going to see the summer doldrums now. Again, we were very happy to see the potential for a breakout to occur on the six-year downtrend line and gold, which did not happen. Some people say it broke the trend line, and perhaps it did. Regardless of that, what I do with the Morgan report and my rule is you need to see penetration to carry through for 3 days in a row on good volume. And of course that did not occur. So I think we're actually where we need to be. And I know the manipulation carries on. I have a whole chapter in the book, Silver Manifesto. I just want to be clear where I stand on that. But even with that said, I think we are in a good place. I think the rest of the year will be good, not great. I look for the summer to be dull, but I think 2018, there'll be enough new buying and several probably reasons to buy that are already existing that will come to the fore again, where you'll see more moving in. And it could be, the Uber app. I'm just making an analogy to the fact that maybe a few of these cryptocurrencies that are joined with the precious metals may start to catch fire, and all of a sudden some of these 750 to 1,000 that are out there will draw some, not all of course, some of the participants over to something that is specie based and outside of let's say the purview of the current banking structure. So there's a lot to look forward to. I know that certainly I've been deemed with the doom moniker, and probably rightfully so. But if you go back and you listen to all my interviews, and I suggest no one do that, it's not worth it. But I've often said, probably earlier, that I have a great faith in the human spirit and the human abilities to move forward and get through really, really tough situations. In fact, all of my major breakthroughs, and I know we've talked about personal development off air, not this time, but in a time or two past, the best that I've ever come through has been when the hardship has hit. It hasn't been when things are just going really, really great and everything's going kind of the way I want it to go. I haven't made any big strides during those times. It's been when I've really been pressured to, something very difficult in my life has occurred where I made the breakthroughs. And this is what I think we're seeing, on a citizenry basis. In other words, as the participants of the planet basis, these young, usually, thinkers are out there creating things that take care of the problems as they exist today, and they're kind of coming up with solutions, and the market's saying, I like that solution. They're voting with their quote-unquote current money and moving it into an alternative. And this is something that cannot be stopped at this point. I really see it, as you said, where there'll be winners and losers in the space. Same thing with this peer-to-peer lending that we touched on. But nonetheless, this has been a thinking change. There's nothing more powerful than the truth, and there's nothing more powerful really than combining that truth to solve problems as they exist and look for real solutions for real people.
Wow, that's powerful thoughts right there, David. One thing that I wanted to mention, we talked about how the mining sector was one of the strongest performing sectors of 2016. But the fact is not many people were in it in January. They got in, obviously, in the spring and the summer, and they were down some. So it didn't really impact people the way we would have hoped it would have. But I say that to say, the opportunity to discuss the opportunity that there is now, because we all tend to sit on the sidelines or be hesitant to participate in an investment until it's really moving. I mean, how many people sat on the sidelines with Bitcoin going right through the triple digits into the $1,000 range and are now just starting to buy with it, over 2,000 hitting 3,000? So I guess I point that out because that's our most recent example of this massive breakout that we've seen that we could also see in the mining sector or in gold and silver, but people are using that same mentality, that sidelined mentality, or I'm too scared to get involved with it because it's not hitting new highs and it's not acting like it's in a bull market, but yet we're holding back. So any final thoughts on that before we say goodbye here?
Well, I concur. I mean, I've learned by my own websites that people don't buy bottoms. They don't buy value. Usually they buy momentum. And it's the herd mentality. And it's kind of, it's factored into the human experience that, you know, it feels good to be in a massive group. The lone wolf is a very rare thing, but these are the leaders that are like making the new alternative currencies and all that. Sometimes it's a group, but normally it's an individual or an individual within a group that's leading the way. And then as more and more people gather, there's more comfort to it. So it's something that you can't correct. I mean, I said earlier on before the big run from 2010 to April, the end of April 2011 with silver, that there'd be more silver bought above 30 than there was below 30. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm certain that the idea is correct. And it'll happen again this time, Kenneth. I think you'll see once silver gets into the 30 range or so, then all the people that are on the sidelines will decide it's a great buy when they could buy it basically for half that price today. The problem is that they don't have verification with their peer group saying it's a great investment. No, I don't want to do anything with silver right now or gold right now. It's not doing anything and hasn't done anything and it won't do anything. And there is some merit to waiting for breakouts to occur in order for anyone to get into an investment. This is taught by Bill O'Neill of Investors Business Daily. But you can do them at lower levels. In other words, you don't have to wait for everybody in your neighbor to be into a certain cryptocurrency for you to jump into it. You can let the market tell you when. And this is actually something that I show with my videos for our website members. I've decided that, you know, I've been showing my trades basically for years, and I still believe that part of the precious metals needs to be traded. I know there's many that will argue with me because of the manipulation, whatever. But nonetheless, we did very good in 2016. Told everyone January would be an up move and maybe into February. And then the market always knows more than me. And I freely admit that. And as the market told me more, I conveyed that to our subscribers. It's going on. It's continuing. And I caught the top in the summer months, and some of my own people, and I don't expect anyone to follow me blindly. I just do my work and I present it for everyone. Said, well, it's only going to be this much of a pullback. I'm not going to worry about it. But then some of those same people later said, geez, I wish I would have taken more profits. And I never advocate trading everything. You just can't, because there's too many unknowns out there. But I trade around a core position, and it's psychologically helpful. When you get in January 2016, you get out in September, and you've made a nice, tidy profit. There's something about the psychology of that. And that's the type of trades I make, just so everyone knows. Oh, David trades, you know, I don't want to jump on. I'm not a day trader. I'll blow everybody up. I know that. I know my personality. I know my travel schedule. And I look for major moves. And I tried one here recently in May, and it didn't work out. I thought we were going to get a breakout, and we did not. But nonetheless, I got in at the right point in time and price in order for everybody to lock in a profit. I mean, it's better than, you know, locking on a loss.
Absolutely, David. Well, everyone, we got the honor and privilege to listen and speak with David Morgan today. It's a really appreciated, sir, for you to come on the show with me. If people want to learn more about the Morgan Report, just with some closing words here, let them know what they can expect to find.
So just go to the main website, themorganreport.com, all one word. Get on our free email list. We've got several PDFs that we'll send you for free. The current one right now is the forecast for 2017 on the silver price. But the main point is to get on the mailing list. We have looked at a couple of new technologies that are in the mining sector, but primarily in the e-waste, electronic waste sector, that I think has huge potential. I am biased. I do own the company, and several let's say, stalwarts within this industry also do, but they're not saying much at this point in time, and I don't blame them. They don't have to, and it's nothing to talk about until it's very meaningful. Again, going back to the price action, if this thing does not work out as expected, and they keep their mouth shut, then they're not really tied to it, whereas yours truly certainly is, and I'm sure I'll pay the price one way or the other depending on the performance of this this technology that's coming to the fore.
Well, very exciting, sir. David, thanks for coming on the line with me today.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for asking.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.